Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Comedy Concepts with your host, Nancy Lombardo.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Comedy Concepts. Today's episode is What's Up, Doc? That's right, we have some ducks online for you today. So if you have any questions, call the numbers listed below and just call in. All right. I lost my caller for a minute. She may have to call back in. Might have pressed the wrong button. Today's guest will be Dr. Dar. Dr. Dar is an anesthesiologist. And she's written a wonderful book called Before the Scalpel. And it's really everything you should know before the scalpel. Let's see if we can get her on the air right now. Hello. There you are.
I'm right here.
Good morning, Dr. Dar.
Good morning, Nancy. Thank you for having me on your wonderful show.
Oh, well, thank you for writing a wonderful book, which I, by the way, highly recommend to everyone. Before the Scalpel is a wonderful, insightful book into what everybody should know before you have any kind of anesthetic or type of procedure. This book was so informative to me. I only wish I had read it before I'd gone under.
That's right, before.
Because afterwards, when I went for my second procedure, I had a lot of questions for the doctor-to-be. Now, first off, let me explain a little bit about you.
Mm-hmm.
You're not only an anesthesiologist, you're also an internist, I believe, internal medicine.
That's right. This is my second life, my new reincarnation. I used to be an internal medicine specialist, an internist, which means I was everything. And I focused my energies on a specialty called anesthesia, which is basically the magic that goes through putting patients to sleep and getting them through surgical procedures and medical procedures, and I found it fascinating. So that's what it's all about.
I like that. Well, it also gives you additional insight because it's not just the specialty of one thing. You kind of like what we call a double threat in show business.
Not only a double threat, we're like a multiple threat. I see what all these guys are doing behind that curtain. I'm like sneaking from one room to the other. I know exactly what's going on.
It's true. You do know. It's like you must be like wanting to say something,
right,
but having to hold your tongue because you're, only here for this. Now, from what I understand, because I have a family member who is an anesthesiologist, it's almost, I would say, you are the final word in the operating room, which I did not know. He had been telling me this for years, and I just told my brother-in-law,
No one believes this. Everyone thinks it's like, who is this person walking around in green pajamas? Get this person out of here. Well, anyway, what happens is that person in the green pajamas comes up. As you're laying on the table, they have this checklist. Okay, do you have this, and done? All this done. Your heart, your lungs. Your EKG, oh, wait a minute, this blood test isn't done. Sorry, we can't do the surgery today. This is missing. Believe it or not, that does happen.
And I'm one of the ignorant. I did not really understand the importance of the anesthesiologist because, you hear, oh, it's just, I'm thinking it's another form of doctor, okay. But I did not realize just how you have the final word. If you even suspect something, you can call the operation off. Is that correct?
Right. The surgeons are so much at our mercy. They look up to us and say, doctor, can you keep this patient alive for another hour? And I'm like, that's what one of the quotations that went across the room with me last week was, I try my best.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's
you come alive for another hour. That's a lot of pressure there.
That's a lot of pressure.
Now, what I liked about your book, which I found fascinating, which was how much power, or patient power, as I refer to it, the patient really has. And your book I found to be so empowering to me personally, and I recommend it to anyone who was you're going under. But because it wasn't not only about what happens, I didn't know there were several types of anesthesia. I mean,
right.
My experience was an epidural. God bless it. I love that. Mm-hmm. And but there are so many different types.
And so many types. They're evolving. They're getting better, slicker, shorter acting.
What would you say the most safest one is?
Everything is equally safe because everything is done in such large volumes throughout the country and throughout the world in such massive quantities on thousands of people that the incidence of something happening or going wrong is in the line of a freak accident or an unfortunate incident.
Yes, there are variables that no
right.
one can tell.
And there's really not much as we can say. The percentage of this will be this. So they're all safe. There are certain anesthetics that are appropriate for certain people and certain types of surgery that they're having done. You know, if you're having a small mole removed from your arm, you need a little bit of local anesthesia, Novocaine, and the doctor can come and pick that right off. And if you're having major soldier surgery right up that arm, well, then you might want to block all the nerves in that arm so your shoulder is operated on. And then after surgery, the blocked nerves stay blocked so you're pain-free. So that's the kind of things that that book is trying to tell you.
It's not
a one-size-fits-all cookie cutter.
Yes, but your book does explain. I mean, because I wouldn't know that there are different types of states being under, and there's also
let's say you move
states.
Up the arm, and now you're having something done on your neck, and you're getting a thyroid surgery. Well, now you're doing something on your thyroid. Well, you have a choice. You could go to sleep, which would be general anesthesia, and you'd be out, totally asleep. Or you could choose to have only the area of your neck numbed up and still have your thyroid taken out. So there's so much variety there. And people should know that there's variety out there. It's not just whatever the doctor tells you to do, because sometimes doctors don't tell you what's exactly right for you, and you need to know what's right for you first.
You're living dangerously there with your doctor
dangerously. Hint, 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 hint.
According to Dr. Dar.
Right.
But it's interesting, too. Yes. And you said also, I believe in your book, I found very interesting because I am a mom, that children, that would be one of my biggest fears, knock on wood. I mean, my son has had to have different slight things, but never where he had to go under. But as a parent, to watch a child go under, there are a lot of variables there that you
right.
should also know.
You know, until the age of five, the heart, the lungs, they all behave differently. They're not the same organs as we see in adults. The heart rate is higher. The blood circulation is faster. Body temperature is different in an infant. Regulation, because they can't shiver, so their body temperature drops. The head is larger in a baby. So these are things we have to be protective of.
Frightening,
them.
Yes.
Frightening.
And but you have a list. You have a checklist.
We have
book.
A great list of by age, and what body parts are different in each age category and when they settle out to be more like adults. I would say by the age of five, definitely by the age of nine, more adult-like organ function occurs.
And also weight and size has a lot to do with it?
Weight and size, of course. Every drug is precisely measured to the weight of the child, because when you make a little bit of error of too much or too little, it can make a big change in a baby that's about 1 kilogram in weight. So that's very, very precisely calculated. It makes a huge difference. It doesn't make a difference in an adult if you give like a CC.
Well, what if
more.
Someone is obese?
Now, obese people are calculated as well. That's another category, because what usually happens is we try to think of obese people and dose the drugs based on their quote-unquote ideal body weight, meaning we close our eyes and we imagine them thin. And then we say, well, if this person were thin and all that fat were not there, how much would this drug dosage be? Now, I know the textbooks always say that, but what winds up happening most of the time is the obese people take a lot more drugs than the average body weight person, and understandably, all that fat has to be dragged through circulation of some of the medications that we give them, and it gets all distributed in that fat. So they do take a lot of medication. And we wind up using tons and tons of medication on some of these obese people. And
Yes, I can see that. So
that's not a pun, actually.
Now let me, yeah, tons and tons of medication. But, you know, it is Comedy Concepts, so it's okay to be punny.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of, like, anesthesiologist jokes, and all I could think of was anesthesiologists do it unconsciously. That's all the case.
Oh, I have an anesthesia joke.
You do? Great.
Yeah. It's $5 to put you to sleep and $5,000 to wake you up.
Say that again. What is that, Dr. Jarre?
$5 to put you to sleep. And it costs $5,000
to wake you up. Okay, yes, okay.
Cash up front, please.
Well, it's come a long way, too, because what would you say, the first, besides being hit on the head by a caveman with a club, the first anesthetic was?
Besides being hit on the caveman, I would think a lot of it was herbs.
Herbs,
a lot
okay.
of it was drugs such as cocaine, which is still around today. A lot of it was concoctions of leaves and various herbal formulas that may or may not have worked. Alcohol was also big in the picture.
Well, that would have been much later. This is over the years, right?
Right, as time was evolving. And slowly, other medications got discovered. Ether, nitrous oxide. These
now,
really
what about abuse? Was ether abused? Well,
ether was abused. Ether was, yes. Ether was abused. You know, it's very funny that you bring up the topic of abuse. Anesthetics have been abused since the day when they were discovered. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah. Put me under. I don't want to be here.
I'm just telling you. You think of the 1800s when they had these laughing gas parties, these ether parties.
Oh, that's funny. They would have laughing gas parties. In the 1800s? What, 1840? No,
yeah.
No, it'd be later. 1840?
Yeah.
Other words, I have a vision of William Cullen Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting around at a laughing gas party,
mm-hmm.
okay, thinking, I think we should save Central Park and have a park before it's all gone. Is anybody with me?
Is anybody with me? And, yes, these laughing gas parties started in the 1800s.
Oh, my gosh.
Nitrous
this
oxide.
Was the first highball, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling you, the minute this thing was discovered, people started getting high on it.
Oh, that's so funny. But, hey, let me ask you a question as a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Should you, like an athlete, before you're going for any kind of procedure, go into some kind of training? Start to diet, or something.
Yeah, it's called sleep.
Oh, sleep? That's the best thing. Before you go to sleep, go
before
to sleep.
Before we put people to sleep, we need to sleep. That's pretty much our regimen. You want your anesthesiologist well-rested, you also want to be the first surgery of the day because that's when the whole surgical team is
and
bright.
And you know what, Dr. Jarre? I learned that from your book, and I did that. I said, she said, be first. So
I
went
to be number one.
And that's why, and I also go, everybody's awake and had their coffee. That's when I want them.
That's right. This is where everybody just came in. They have bushy tails, and I want my surgery right
now. I want, how you feeling? And also, you suggest talk to your anesthesiologist.
Yeah.
I mean, after
absolutely.
I read your book, I knew to go in, ask their name. And you can ask questions like, what hospital? This is a in-out procedure. What hospital are you affiliated with if anything
sure.
goes wrong?
I had a woman yesterday who came by me, and she has severe allergies and medical problems, and she's coming for thyroid surgery next Monday, which is the 21st. And
mm-hmm.
she came a few days beforehand. We went through all her medications, what her plan of surgery anesthesia were going to be. So now when she sees me next Monday, we're going to be like old friends. Hi, how you doing? And I'm going to start doing exactly what I was planning to do. She can be like, hi, Dr. Jarre, and just lay on the table, and that'll be great.
Well, Dr. Jarre, I'm looking at my switchboard here. It's lighting up here. We've got some callers. So,
exciting.
Questions. All right, here we go.
Questions, 11.
All right, caller, your name, please.
Hi, this is Jennifer Baccio.
Oh, hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Jennifer.
I'm free. Okay.
Hi, how are you? I had a question for Dr. Jarre. I have a hard time recovering out of anesthesiology, out of general, and even a partial. I've had knee surgery done and had a partial, I guess, a spinal block from my waist down, and
mm-hmm.
then also just general anesthesiology. I don't come out of it. It takes me 3 times longer, and I get
mm-hmm.
very nauseous when I do come out of it. Is there a reason for this?
Mm. two things could be going on. One is during the partial, which we had the spinal, you may have gotten something called Versed or midazolam to keep you slightly sedated during that case.
Uh-huh.
In the general, you also probably got midazolam. Now, a lot of people stay very, very groggy and very sleepy with the midazolam for long, long periods of time. You should check in your anesthesia records or ask the next time you have anesthesia, did somebody give you Versed? Now, I'm not talking about a little bit of Versed. They could have given you
Write that down, Jenny.
I am.
A lot of Versed. And that way, you know, it clouds your head. You're not thinking straight. And it's like Valium, but it's short-acting Valium, but it kind of gets you unsteady, and you're not thinking straight and blocks your memory. Now, as far as the nausea vomiting is a classic, classic, classic side effect of general anesthesia, and especially women. Oh, God. Women, when they wake up, they want that puking basin.
Right.
And if you've had any GYN surgery or anything like that, or laparoscopic surgery, you know, it's definitely a high-risk situation. So, fortunately, anesthesiologists to the rescue, we have things called Zofran and steroids that we give to patients during their case. And I want to say, like, 90%, I don't want to say 100, 90% of the time, it blocks the nausea and vomiting, and we can repeat it if they feel nauseous. Also, one of the keys is combating nausea and vomiting is staying hydrated through the IV.
Oh.
The more dehydrated you are, the more nauseous you are.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay, so I shouldn't be hydrated then? Is that what you're
saying? No, you should be. You should be hydrated. You keep that IV in you, and you tell the doctor, I want this entire bottle of IV put into my veins.
Okay.
Not half a bottle.
So then my reaction, as far, I mean, I've even had the, you know, the doctors be surprised that I wasn't coming out of it sooner.
Mm-hmm.
It's not normal.
And there's a large variation in the way people wake up. It's a bell-shaped curve. You could be on the one end of the bell-shaped curve, which is a slow wake-up, and then most people fall in the middle, and then some people fall into the other end with a fast wake-up. If you are the slow wake-up person, I mean, the way to tailor your particular anesthetic is to give you slightly less of the dosage of medications like Versed or the anesthetic gas, because it doesn't
really work. Now, may I interrupt for a moment? Is she allowed to request this, and when should she request this?
Oh, I have seen this before. Patients have told me it took me a day to wake up from the anesthesia. Okay, well, that's great. I will give you things that are shorter acting that don't last for 10 hours. I'll give you something that will last for, like, 10 minutes, and that can be turned on and off really quickly. We have so many drugs that are so short acting now that for drugs to linger in the body is unusual. And also, there's a special monitor that we can put on your forehead. This is all explained in the book. It's called the BIS monitor, B-I-S.
And that book is Before the Scalpel.
The Scalpel.
And that's at Tell Me Press, by the way. I just want to get that in, www.tellmepress.com.
Right. Thank you very much, Nancy.
Okay.
And the BIS monitor, when they put this sticker on your head, it looks like a Band-Aid, and it's connected to a computer module, it actually tells the anesthesiologist the depth of your anesthesia. Depth meaning how deep you are under anesthesia. And, you know, most people don't need to be under absolute deep anesthesia where they're almost at the level of a coma. No, we keep a certain depth, and that's what needs to be monitored. When you are getting an anesthetic, ask for a BIS monitor if you're going under general anesthesia.
What was that again? It's called a BIS, B-I-F-F?
B-I-S, BIS,
BIS
monitor.
BIS monitor.
Say, if I'm going to be under general anesthesia, I have a lot of trouble waking up. It really takes me a day or two to wake up. I want to make sure I'm given the appropriate amount of anesthesia. You guys are too heavy-handed. Put this BIS monitor on me so I can wake up faster.
Okay. That's mm-hmm. good. Now, also, what do you, is there anything you can do, Dr. Dar? I mean, your book pretty much is very empowering for patients. Mm-hmm. But is there anything you could do that your advice to calm a patient, say, that has a fear of going under? Like I do? No. I'm afraid. I really am. I have so much, like, in my head I know it's going to be okay, but the fear of being unconscious.
Yeah. Yes, that is a little bit of an unknown space. It's not like getting off to the stratosphere or anywhere else. Get to know your doctor. Develop some confidence in the person who's taking care of you. That's very important. You have to feel that the person taking care of you is really qualified and experienced and has done your surgery before. This is not somebody who just came off the street and said, hey, I'm your anesthesiologist. You want to make sure they've been around the block many, many times.
Yeah,
that's one way.
So you can ask, how many years have you been doing this?
Right.
You should actually, in your book, you recommend that you ask. And what I liked about your book is that you also had, you can ask for the room to be warmer.
Ask for the room to be warmer. You say to the anesthesiologist, I'm sorry, who are you? How long have you been working here? Where did you go to medical school? Just very basic questions. Most doctors answer those questions. I mean,
I always like to know their name of anybody that's putting me unconscious.
Right. None of this is a secret. I mean, it's not a big, fat secret. Everybody,
well, it was till I read your book it was a secret. I mean,
everybody else's doctor is not a big, fat secret. I don't know why the anesthesia has to be a big, fat secret. So, it's not a big, fat secret.
Well, listen, Dr. Dar, hold on, because we have more callers. Okay.
Oh, okay.
You're breaking the charts here with my caller, Colin. Hello, mm-hmm. You're on the air. Can I help you? Hello, caller?
Caller.
I think the caller's just listening. All right, let's go to the next one.
Hi, caller.
It's one I don't. Okay. Hello, you're on the air. Comedy Concepts. Who's this?
Hello. Is this Nancy?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Nancy. It's Dr. Brummer.
Oh, Dr. Brummer. Oh, our second guest, Dr. Brummer. Meet Dr. Dar.
Hi, Dr.
Hello,
Dar.
Hello, Dr. Brummer. I'm Dr. Dar.
Good morning.
Dr. Dar. And she's also on the phone. We have a call in. Jenny, stay on, because Dr. Brummer is an excellent podiatrist.
Okay.
Okay. He's got a doctorate in I can't even say this word. Help me with this.
Podiatric medicine.
Podiatric.
Podiatric medicine.
Podiatric medicine. And also, what I like about Dr. Brummer, or John, Dr. John, is that he does a lot of athletic work for athletic teams, the Harlem Strong Dogs, basketball. He's a team podiatrist, the Brooklyn Kings. He's a podiatrist for the United States Basketball League. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Brummer,
yes.
Dr. Dar specializes in anesthesiology.
Yeah.
How much of that is part of your structure?
Well, I have a little bit of a subspecialty in sports medicine and foot surgery. So I use anesthesiology quite often because most of my procedures are done under max sedation, what we call monitored anesthesia care sedation. And a lot of people...
Oh, Dr. Dar knows what that means.
Yeah.
I don't.
just for the listeners, the anesthesiologist is a very important part of my practice. It's important. There's a lot of procedures that I do. Most of the procedures I do only require sedation, not general anesthesia. And I don't know if Dr. Dar explained the difference between general anesthesia and...
Yeah, it's all in the book.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's a lot. It's better for my patients because it's a quicker recovery when they're just sedated, and it's also important to work well with the anesthesiologist that you're operating with, because under sedation sometimes you can become fidgety, especially in the procedures that I use. We use a tourniquet around the ankle so that we have a nice clean view of the anatomy when we're operating.
Mm-hmm.
So tourniquets can become quite painful, even under sedation,
right.
And can create some nervous flitches and stuff like that. So it's important. A lot of the anesthesiologists, they're able to monitor the anesthesia and keep a nice flow of anesthetic going so that the patient really doesn't have any agitation. Sometimes people can wake up in the middle of sedation. You know, some doctors, because of if the patient has, multiple medical problems, It's safer to just kind of keep them more awake, a little bit less of a twilight. So it's patient dependent.
So Dr. Dar, do you work in conjunction with podiatrists as well?
Well, we do a lot of foot surgery. I also do a tremendous amount of vascular surgery.
Oh.
Vascular surgery does focus on the leg and the foot because most of these patients are diabetics or smokers who eventually need to have their foot revascularized or even their toes amputated from gangrene in their toes. My message to the world, don't smoke. And so we do get involved in that type of surgery. And what we do, mostly in a hospital setting when this type of surgery happens, is yes, we do blocks of certain toes, any toe that's supposed to be amputated. So we put local around the area, and it makes it easier for the surgeon to amputate that toe.
That's pretty rough.
It's actually a very easy thing to do.
I know, but it's toes.
Yeah. Actually, taking a toe off is probably, like, the simplest amputation that you can think of.
You think so, Dr. Brummer?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, we do quite a bit of, well, I used to do a lot more limb salvage, and I agree with Dr. Dar. Diabetes is devastating this country. And the world also, and it's
smoking.
Oh yeah, and smoking. I mean, it's those two mixed together. It's like it's.
And Dr. Brummer, you're also a surgical podiatry as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel bad about diabetes. I work in at the Jewish Guild for the Blind in Manhattan. And most of my patients are blind patients that have lost their vision here at this clinic from diabetes because of diabetic retinopathy.
Mm-hmm.
And the other consequences of the diabetic disease is, besides the poor circulation, like Dr. Dar just stated, but also something called neuropathy, which is decreased sensation in the lower extremities, and also can be on the hands as well. And when you're dealing with patients that don't have sensation, you and I, we walk down the street and you get a little pebble in your shoe, you stop, you take off your shoe and take out the pebble. These people, they can't feel that pebble. That pebble will get embedded into their foot, will cause they don't feel it. It'll get into the skin, cause an irritation, a small infection, and they don't know it until it's late. And that's what ends up quite commonly becoming, amputations. A lot of people, because they cut their nails, their toenails. Just you and I, we all simply cut our toenails without having any problems. There are patients that will cut their skin and create an infection and have no idea about it. And that's another reason why you see a lot of amputations. It's amazing how horrible this disease can be if it's not controlled.
Oh, interesting. All right. Dr. Dar, I just want to reiterate, Dr. John Brummer,
mm-hmm.
is that she has a great book that you might want to recommend to your patients, which is called Before the Scalpel, and that's www.tellmepress.com. And I found this book, I think you as a doctor would find it even interesting, the questions that are there that you can ask that a lot of people don't know. Now, your website, I believe, if people want more information, is
www.brummersurgicalpodiatry.com.
And that's a lot. The Brummer is spelled Brummer.
That's right.
Surgicalpodiatry.com. That's a lot of words on one business card. I just
to
say.
Your whole resume is right there.
Oh, listen, we have, there's another caller. Let me see here. Okay. I have a question for both of you. By the way, Dr. John Brummer is an excellent softball player. We're both on the Friars softball team. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi,
hello.
This is Jenny again. Jenny.
Oh, hi, Jenny. Oh, okay,
yeah,
yes. Do you have another question about your feet, Jenny?
I do, actually.
This is your day, Jenny. Go,
yes,
go, doctor,
it is.
Go.
Thank you. I have a question for Dr. John. I was in practicing martial arts, and I kicked something in the exercise, and I dislodged my big toenail,
mm-hmm.
and it came off, and then it grew back, kind of distorted.
Yes, that's quite common. Now, how long ago did it grow back, and did it fully grow back now?
I would say it's been at least 10 years or so.
Oh, okay, so
it's grown back, yes, but it's much smaller and much narrower, and it's not flat.
Is it, so it's elevated. Is it flaky underneath there as well?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So quite commonly, this is what happens. First of all, as a former martial artist, because I used to love Taekwondo. I did that.
Me
for
too.
About
I'm a black belt, Dr. John. I'm a black belt.
Oh my God!
Taekwondo.
Watch out!
Oh my gosh!
Okay, put me under the wrong way, I'm coming for you.
No wonder why she's good at softball. All right? She doesn't let anything by her. She's
really,
always the sensitive move.
Where do you become so expert?
The trauma that you induced onto the nail, whatever happens, quite commonly, a lot of people, they don't know this. It's important to actually take care of your feet. If you induce a trauma to one of the fingernails or toenails and you get that black and blue underneath the nail, it's called a subungual hematoma. It means that probably one of the blood vessels underneath the nail had popped, right, or had broken through the skin. Now, the nail system, the whole nail plate, it functions as like a barrier over there, and it's a sealed system. So when you get bleeding underneath that nail, the blood has no place to go. So it actually will lift the nail and take it off of the nail bed that it lies on, and that's how people lose their toenails and fingernails from the trauma to that area.
Wow.
Now, also, what happens is in the martial arts dojo or gym or studio, it's no matter how clean it is and how nice it is, right, and no matter how well they clean their showers, there are certain people that are going to be susceptible to different kinds of bacteria and fungus. And the funguses that, you see these little Lamisil commercials on TV with these little guys picking up toenails and jumping underneath them, you know, this fungus is ubiquitous in nature. It's everywhere. And certain people will be more susceptible than other people. And it's very easy from either the trauma to disrupt the nail matrix. I know this sounds like all technical and stuff, but the nail matrix is actually right behind where your nail begins.
Now, it sounds like it's a good idea to wear shoes and socks a lot.
Yeah,
from
is.
All of what you're saying.
It is.
I actually
Dr. John, you're an athlete, aren't you? Don't you do
I do Pilates and elliptical, et cetera. I don't know if you can call that athlete, but
yeah.
I personally like to wear socks around the house. I find it more comfortable, and it's hygienic for my feet. And, of course, you know, wearing closed-toed shoes is always safer than open-toed shoes and sandals. So, yeah, I think just remembering to do that, cover your feet, I think that'll go a long way.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's very important to protect your feet.
Yeah, don't walk around barefoot.
Yes, Dr. Darn, it's also, I think, along those lines, Dr. Brummer, Before the Scalpel, her book has a lot of information on that. Could you suggest could they go to your website and find information on anything? Do you have a question or answer? Or now,
yeah,
you're located in Manhattan,
yeah,
right?
I'm on 53rd and Madison, 515 Madison Avenue. As far as treatment goes, it has to be determined if it's a nail fungus or the nail is thickened either from a fungus or a mold, or if it's just from the trauma, because sometimes trauma to that nail matrix can produce a nail that makes it thicker. So very easily, you take a little piece of the nail, you send it to the laboratory, they do a special stain, and we can determine it.
And may I add that we have patients that have said they sort of start picking on things.
Uh-oh.
Don't pick on anything. That's not a good idea. I was like, how did you get this crater in your leg? Oh, I was picking on it. And it turned into a crater. I was like, you were just picking on it. You were really picking on it.
Yeah.
you took a pick to it. You know
right.
What I find interesting about both of you doctors is that you're both athletic.
Yeah, Dr. Dar, what kind of
I like to bike ride. I do Pilates every week.
Oh,
and elliptical.
Running, don't you run too?
I run on the treadmill. I'm a treadmill runner. And I'm outdoor biking, Pilates, and
now, do you two know something that us other people don't know about exercise? Because the both of you are very athletic. I know, I've seen
Well, my motto with exercise is I can't do the same thing every day. So
okay.
I need a little bit of variety. I cannot, stare at a TV set on the elliptical. I would be bored out of my mind about the third day of the week. So I have to change over to do something else. And that variety actually creates some enjoyment in the exercise. I think that motivates me more.
And Dr. Brummer?
I think I agree with Dr. Dar. I think that probably a lot of doctors have certain things in common because it's not that we get bored easily, but we deal with so many different people on so many different levels and so many different things every day that sitting there in front of a treadmill is very difficult for me as well. I like, as Dr. Dar says, she goes and does bike riding. I love being outside and running, mm-hmm. and I like to do it on soft pavement, and running around the city is great because you can run different parts of the city so easily, and everything's accessible. It's really a small island if you really think of it. But
well, we have another caller here, so doctors, hold with me. I'll check
sure.
this caller. Okay, caller from New York City. Hello? Are you on the line? Oh, they just called in. All right. They're probably just listening. Hello, caller?
Hello.
Caller?
I hear
Hello.
Yes?
Hi.
Can you hear? We can hear you. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
All right. You're on with Dr. Dar and Dr. Brummer.
This is Gloria Basio calling. I have a question for Dr. Brummer.
Okay.
I have had a nail fungus infection on two toes for over 20 years now.
Mm-hmm.
I was told that I cannot take any oral medications because I am anemic.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else I can do?
Well, actually, there's the newest treatment now for the nail fungus. They
yes.
just came out. The FDA just approved a laser. It's called the Pinpoint Laser, and it's actually it's listed on my website. There's 100 doctors in the country that are using this laser, and there are 20 in New York, and I happen to be one of them.
Wow.
And this new laser, what it does, now let me tell you, the research states, and it's a young study, it's only a year old, but this is the first laser that they've ever developed that will denature the fungus via the heat and light along the toenail, and the procedure probably takes about 40 minutes. And you have to do all the toenails, and it has the highest, they call it mycological cure rates. So that's another way of saying killing fungus.
Yes.
So that is one thing. And because of the anemia, I would, most of the time, whenever I treat a patient with an oral antifungal, I always talk with their primary medical doctor. And because there are certain doctors that are scared to give patients oral antifungals because of the history of them, but
yes.
they're quite safe now, you know, depending. It's mostly the liver pathology.
Dr. Dar, any thoughts?
I would imagine that giving a laser treatment, yes, we use laser quite frequently in various types of surgery. Laser is quite safe. Dr. Renner, do you put on those anti-laser deflection glasses?
With this procedure, you have to.
Right.
And the patient also has to wear them as well.
Correct. And usually laser is, it can have a stinging feeling from what I understand.
Actually, you're absolutely right. That's the only thing is
so
that
it can cause some pain, and you can put what's called an Emla cream, which is like a local anesthetic cream, maybe 45 minutes before the area that you're going to laser, so that it would feel like rubber bands are against your skin. That's what laser feels like someone snapping a rubber band against your skin. So I think the Emla cream kind of subdues that, not 100%, but makes the procedure a lot more comfortable for the patient.
I see.
Well, thank you very much. Also, so Gloria, if you want more information, please go to his website, which is easy to remember because it's www.brummersurgicalpodiatry.com. www.brummersurgicalpodiatry.com, and there's more information there. This is a great show.
Don't
go anywhere. Yes, Gloria, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Doctors,
I'm loving this show. I'm learning so much today. This is going to be like people are going to come back to the show just for the information you've given today. I'm thrilled.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Yes.
Yeah, this is a fun show.
And also, so Dr. Dar, with that, I like the idea of wearing socks. Dr. Brummer, the sock issue.
Sock is important. Diabetics should wear shoes at home, actually.
Diabetics should wear
shouldn't
shoes.
They shouldn't be barefoot. They always feel like they like to have something on their feet, but they always love being barefoot at home for some reason.
Well, I think that's from the Taekwondo, I always like to be in touch with the floor. That's one thing. But also, the both of you, I do find it interesting that you both are, I assume, Dr. Brummer, you're also in the non-smoking favor of
smoking campaign.
Smoking is bad for you.
And can I ask you both doctors which hospitals you're affiliated with?
Dr. Dar, you can go first.
I am with New York Presbyterian, Medical Center, Weill Cornell Medical College?
I'm affiliated with Mount Sinai Hospital.
Mount Sinai.
Okay. Yeah, Medical Center.
Oh, you can practically have coffee. You're so close.
We are very close to each
other.
Both Upper East Siders.
Both East Siders. Yeah. I mean, as far as the smoking is concerned, does our president still smoke?
I think he does.
That's embarrassing.
I think it's good for the smoking, for the tobacco companies. Right.
I'm mortified.
I think it's crazy. It's the biggest Marlboro man
out
there.
I'm totally embarrassed.
It is a hard thing. It's not the best thing, but
Did you read in the paper the study yesterday, Dr. Dar? There was a study that says that the average person tries to quit smoking between 6 and 11 times.
I believe it.
Yeah, and I think it was a Swedish study. And they also stated in the study, they found out that the nicotine has some sort of, the nicotine patches, and something in smoking causes people to itch. They just found a connection between
them. Well, there might be something. Wait a minute. Did you just say Swedish study?
Yeah, something.
Okay, right there. We know that the people in Europe smoke far more than the Americans smoke.
Oh, yeah.
And
so
I believe that Japanese cigarettes are addictive because they have higher levels of nicotine.
Oh, yeah, they have smoke shops all over the world still.
They're still having those parties, Dr. Dar.
They're still having those parties.
We had discussed earlier.
That started in the 1800s. We weren't invited.
You brought up an interesting point. Is there a difference in life expectancy of a European versus an American? I don't know the answer to this.
And, we always hear that the French are in great shape. They're impossibly perfect. They're thin. And they drink a glass of wine every day, so their cholesterol, HDL levels are perfect. Mm-hmm. And the level of obesity is less in Europe, which is true. All of these factors are true. They are less heavy. I would suspect, I would love to go lurking around one of those hospitals, because that's my favorite activity, is lurking around and finding out what other people are doing. I would think that they have a high rate of lung cancer that we don't hear about.
That explains the thinness.
Right.
Oh, right.
And the fact that they smoke, they don't eat. And I would suspect that there's a lot of vascular issues in the legs over time. And we are just not privy to that information. I would love to have that data.
Your next book, Dr. Dar.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Now, Dr. Bremer, do you have any periodicals out currently or working on anything?
I just did a small thing. I was in a fraternity in college, and they have a quarterly magazine that goes out, and I just did an article about summer running and athletics and how to prevent injuries and stuff like that. And most of the publications that I've had in the past were just in podiatric medical journals and a magazine called Podiatry Today, which I'm sure that you all subscribe to.
Oh my gosh, I live for it.
But not much else. I was actually on another show not that long ago for an interview. A fellow Friar also.
Fellow Friar. Which Friar?
Cecily.com.
Oh.
Cecily Armstrong on the Women's Network.
Oh.
Wow.
Well, you're
talking about the stiletto heels. Can I just ask you, I went out looking for shoes. Is there anything less than a 4-inch stiletto heel that I can humanly walk on and not look like I was toppling?
I don't know how you women do this. I have no idea. I mean, literally, I'm in Midtown Manhattan on 53rd and Madison. I go out to lunch almost every day.
Yeah.
And when I see these women walking around, first of all, I want you to know I'm an advocate of wearing sneakers to work and then wearing, your professional shoes for meetings and stuff like that.
That's poo-pooed in a lot of cultures.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
totally.
You have to wear the stilettos.
Well, let me just interject there. I know I'm a comedian, but I have never worn a high heel in my life, ever.
Good. Your feet are probably
very
beautiful.
Good.
Well,
good.
Bad, but the Taekwondo gave me spurs on the tops of my feet. that black belt, I earned it.
It's like in that James Bond movie, you
but
know,
I
with
have
the
never,
doctor, no, with that thing, that spike came out of the foot, you know.
Yes, yeah. I've never worn a heel. I've never worn a heel. If I do any kind of film work,
mm-hmm.
and it's a period film,
mm-hmm.
I say, what have you got in a wedge? Because I've never worn a heel in my life.
Wow.
I know, Dr.
Understand.
Dar, on the other hand, there's a love there that I know that certain ladies have for that heel. There's a love there.
I love
there's
heels.
A love.
I love
but
heels,
then one thing I realize is, you know you're going to wear these 4-inch heels. You know you're going to have blisters all over your foot very soon, within an hour or so. And then you have to run with the Band-Aids, the Sizz Baths. And
Dr. Dar, I think you should be calling for an appointment with Dr. Brummer.
Local anesthetic cream.
Is that now? Are you abusing those creams, Dr. Dar?
I'm worried about her.
I mean, it's one thing with Michael Jackson, but now I'm learning a lot. There's this
you're
cream out there.
Creams. All of a sudden, that's
a anesthetic cream.
Yeah.
You know, if Michael Jackson had used that cream, he'd be alive today.
Exactly.
Well, I think he was using a cream because when he was getting his skin stripped off to get, he must have had some local anesthetic cream going on.
Do you know about this cream, Dr. Brummer?
Yes, I know about Emla cream. You know, it's good. It's actually, we use it for sometimes for like little synthetic skin grafts,
uh-huh.
Depending on some patients, you know. If a patient's neuropathic, like I was talking about with the diabetes, they don't feel anything. So most of the time, you know.
Well, you know what?
If you're like me, you feel everything. So.
I think the local cream is great on kids because they're so afraid of needles, and you put a little cream on them, and they don't realize they're getting a needle. That's
oh, yeah,
where
absolutely.
It really has a nice.
Well, can I give you a mom anesthetic?
Yeah.
A mom. This is a mom anesthetic that
yeah.
I use.
Tell me.
And Ambisol to remove splinters.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
That's
been around
remedy.
Forever.
Yeah, but I use it like to remove splinters from my son's hand.
That's a local anesthetic.
Yeah.
There you go. We've been doing it and not knowing.
Yeah, that's a local anesthetic.
But, Dr. Dar, you sound like you have some feet problem going on here.
I'm just afraid of buying these. I actually ask the shoe salesman, is this going to rip my foot apart? And honestly, they go to me in a very soft voice. They say, yes, it will.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to hear that.
So you know what you're getting into.
Right. They tell me, exactly, it will rip your feet apart. I'm like, oh, just
what
well, I want
let me
to
ask,
hear.
Let me ask Dr. Brummer, though. This, you bring up an interesting point, Dr. Dar. Are uh-huh. there a fashionable heel that you would, a designer that you would say would be the safest to wear if she were to wear a heel?
I'll tell you this much. You know, I try not to be an advocate of anything over a 2-inch heel. I think that you lose a lot of stability. It throws off a lot of your biomechanics. So, you know, 2 to 2.5 inches, I mean, that's probably the top where you can, you know.
Wait a minute. It's Fashion Week this week. You can't be saying so.
You're killing her.
Wait,
well,
it's Fashion Week.
Listen,
oh, I have a question for you, Dr. Brummer, from one of our listeners
sure.
in Boston. They want to know, does the podiatrist use an anesthetic in his procedures?
Which procedure? For the nails?
That's just their question. Any procedure, I assume.
Well, most procedures will
because
use anesthetic.
Because Dr. Dar is in the operating room, and you're in your office, I assume, most of the time. No, no, wait, you do surgery.
I operate in the surgery center, in the ambulatory surgery center as well as in the hospital. I think that they're probably referring to the laser question.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, we do not use a topical anesthetic because it's not in the FDA guidelines, it would be a deviation from the protocols for the use of that laser, which you know it's really harsh, you know, to get something approved by the FDA. It cost $1 billion
really?
For them to evaluate.
Any off-label use of anesthesia?
Well, yeah. I know that when I do the procedure that some people do experience some heat on the nail and it's painful,
mm-hmm.
but there was actually an issue at the surgery center with one guy that did use a topical anesthetic, and the surgery center, the anesthesiologist said it's not part of the protocol, so you're not supposed to.
Mm.
So, but most of the other procedures, if it's a nail avulsion, an ingrown toenail, bunion procedures, hammer toes, heel spurs, tendon repairs, all of them require a local anesthetic, in addition to, most of the time, sedation if we're going into the operating room.
I have a question that you two can answer to me, because I had this. I had a piece of glass in my foot. Now, they gave me a shot that was more painful than having the glass removed. What was that shot?
Tetanus.
Was it in your arm or were they
removing
the glass?
In my foot. They were moving from my foot, the shot burned like crazy. It felt like fire.
That was a local anesthetic, I'm sure. And the other thing was that, you know, a lot of doctors, I mean, I don't know, Dr. Dar might be able to help me with this. You know, whenever I do a block, I use ethyl chloride, which is a freezing spray, which is similar to how Dr. Dar was explaining that, you know, you use a topical to numb the kid's, the kid's skin. So I use this freezing spray called ethyl chloride, and what it does is it numbs the skin and freezes it so cold. Some people, you know, think that it's painful. Most people do not. I'd say 99% of the people don't think so. But it's so cold that you don't feel that initial, prick of the injection.
What was the name of this again?
Ethyl chloride. And that kind of, you know, subsides a little bit of the initial portion of the injection, and then just the normal injection of the local anesthetic, it's going to feel tingling. It's going to be burning. I mean, it's a different pH.
The local anesthetic burns. Yeah. But as the anesthetic sets in, like, you know, Novocaine in your gums before you go to the dentist, or let's say you're getting an epidural and you're in labor and the first prick in your back is a local anesthetic. As it settles in, the sensation, the area gets nicely numb, and you shouldn't feel anything. Ethyl chloride is nice because it kind of freezes the area instantly, and so the doctor can work around it. So how did you get this glass out?
I have to say, and in defense, I love doctors, but I have to say, in defense of nurses, the doctor kept saying he didn't see anything. And the nurse turned to him and yelled at him, "If she's saying it's in there, it's in there."
That makes a good cartoon.
And the doctor finally goes, "Oh, you're right. It is in there. Now I see it."
It was only glass, and they stitched it up. Oh, good.
Oh, yes, but it was very painful. Now, I did have an injection on Dr. Brummer on a spur. I have spurs on the, like I said, from Taekwondo. As you know, it's all kicking with the tops of your feet.
Uh-huh.
Now I have a spur. Now I had an injection that we're going to try and help it that way. And that was, what kind of injection was that? That was like a cortisone.
It was a mixture, probably of a local anesthetic, as well as maybe either a long-acting or a combination of a long and a short-acting steroid, which is not always, it's not always, everybody says it's cortisone, but, you know, cortisone is kind of like, it's a brand name for a steroid. There are other things, Kenalog, triamcinolone.
Well, Kenalog is very popular. When people have herniated discs or slipped discs, that's the same cocktail that's put in the back for the slipped disc.
Absolutely. We use dexamethasone, Kenalog, and Celestone. Those are the three steroids that I use.
Yeah. Well, I know one thing for sure. I am never playing Scrabble with the two of you. You will murder me in Scrabble. Oh, wait, I have somebody. Let's see. They're not calling in, but they're writing in to me on my switchboard here.
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay, yes, all right. Let me go. They want to know where they can get before the scalpel. Well, you can get it at one place. It's www.tellmepress.com. I highly recommend this book. It's recommended by Comedy Concepts.
Available in Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Barnes & Noble. You can look it up on the Internet and find out a little bit more about Dr. Panchala Dar. You got somebody, too. All right. They want to know where they can get in touch with Dr. Brummer. Okay. You can have some feed people coming in here.
Yeah,
it's www.brummersurgical.com. Podiatry.com. I think even if you Google it and misspell it, you're going to find Dr. Brummer.
You want me to give a phone number?
Sure. Do you mind?
No, not at all.
Okay.
The office number is 212-758-3939.
And you take insurance, I hope.
I'm out of most of the networks, but I accept all insurance.
There you go. That's what I like to hear. Can you believe it's been almost an hour, Dr. Dar?
I can't believe it.
And you always
having so much fun.
And you think that, like, it's not. But we still have a couple of minutes left.
Okay.
Is there anything you two would like to add? I mean, Dr. Dar, you go first.
Well,
that I
just want to stress that so many millions of procedures are done a year, I mean, including podiatry, but we're just looking about invasive surgical procedures, not just hangnails and this and that. We're talking about major heart surgery, brain surgery. And everybody from every walk of life has to, at some point, face this, where they have to go under a surgeon's knife. And if they're under a surgeon's knife, they will likely be under the care of an anesthesiologist, a very, very essential and important person in the room that I would say used to be overlooked, but I don't think about
well,
today.
Not anymore.
I think
not
today people take it pretty seriously, and they're like, this is not a joke. This is somebody who's really going to put me to sleep. Right, I'm not kidding about that. And people are making an effort, I'm seeing, that they want to find out a little bit more about the anesthetic, and they want to read up on it. They read about everything else. They might as well read up on this one.
It is a very good, Before the Scalpel. I highly recommend this book, Before the Scalpel. It's very, I would just have to say, patient empowering, and
yes,
it's a must-read. Dr. Brummer, I would recommend it to you. Do you have anything you'd like to add, Dr. Brummer?
Well, I just think the a well-informed patient and a patient that comes into, I agree with Dr. Dar, I think that people are becoming more and more knowledgeable about their own medical procedures, and I think that that's important. I think that a good surgeon, a good doctor, always tells the patient, you know, medicine, it's not perfect, and neither is surgery. So, you know, there's always a potential for complications, and I stress
right.
that to all my patients.
Well said. Well
you know, said. You know, 90% of the time things go perfectly well, but, you know, that 10%, and if you fall on that 10%, you know, it's a realistic thing, and it does happen to the best people. It happens to the worst people.
That's right.
But it's a real-life thing, and I think that that's one of the most important things, is just stressing, you know, education and learning about and understanding, you know, what can happen.
That's right.
So that's an educated patient is the best patient always.
Yeah, you know, well, and it's a doctor's responsibility also to tell, you know, to inform that patient.
And so patients, don't be afraid to ask these questions.
Actually,
yeah.
When the patient knows, the doctor and I, as a doctor, I have a much better conversation with that patient on a different level. It's sort of like I'm not teaching them blocks, but I'm teaching them perhaps how to read and write. It's a little bit different.
Oh, I find it very empowering.
So
more
once
you know,
they come in with that foundation,
yeah.
I can. It's not kindergarten anymore. It's first grade. So this way I can talk at a different level with that patient who's empowered.
And it's great. And Dr. Dar, I get a great feeling you have great, both of you have great audience, not as I would say audience, your patients, great patient rapport. And I just want to thank you both for being a guest today. Again, Dr. John Brummer, that's www.brummersurgicalpodiatry.com, and Before the Scalpel by Banchella Dar. Tell Me Press. www.tellmepress. Finish that for me. Tellmepress.com.
Tellmepress.com.
And you can check out more. And I want to thank you both for being my guest. And now
thank
I can't believe
thank
it's
you,
been
Nancy.
2 hours. And I'm going to just, we're down to our last minute.
Okay.
Lay you out. Thank you both. That's Dr. Dar, Before the Scalpel, and Dr. Brummer, John Brummer. He's on Madison Avenue.
Thank
you can reach him
thank
at 212-758-3939. Thank you. This has been Comedy Concepts.
Super.
Thanks, Dr. Dar.
Have a good
thank
day.
Thank you. Great to meet you.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you.
Well, that certainly was fascinating and informative. Join us again. Comedy Concepts, Blog Talk Radio.